Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Warplanes and drones continued to bombard the central Gaza Strip overnight following a deadly weekend of strikes. On Saturday, at least 90 people were killed and more than 300 injured in an Israeli airstrike in a designated humanitarian zone close to Khan Yunis, according to the Hamas-run health ministry. Now, for the latest on this, I'm joined on the line by Alistair Bunkle, who's Sky News Middle East correspondent. Alistair, thank you for being with us this morning. The target of the strike near Khan Yunis on Saturday, it was a Hamas military chief, was it? And what do we know about all of that?
Yeah, so the main target was Mohammed Daif, who is a very, very senior figure in Hamas. Pretty much Israel's most wanted man since the 1990s. He had a number of hats. He was the chief of staff in Hamas. He was the commander of the Al-Qassam Brigades, which is the military wing of Hamas. He was number two in Gaza to Yahya Sinwar, who remains alive. He would have been absolutely central to the planning of the October the 7th attacks. He has escaped assassination many times, including losing an eye and a leg during one attack on him. He had the nom de guerre, the guest, Daif, his surname. Means guest in Arabic, but it's because he would sleep in so many different locations to evade capture or detection. There's only like one or two photographs doing the rounds of him down the years. He was never really seen or heard from. So he's an incredibly elusive figure that the Israelis would have wanted to get. And so if they have got him, it is really significant. But in doing so, whether they got him or not, it looks very likely that the civilian death toll as a result of this, these series of strikes, was very great indeed.
So the Israelis have no way of knowing whether he has been killed or not. Hamas officials are denying that he had been successfully killed in this attack, as Israel had wanted to. That was the aim of the entire thing. But what we do know is that the aftermath of this attack has been absolutely horrendous. And we have some of the aid workers saying that of all of the things that have happened since October the 7th, that what they are witnessing now is amongst some of the most horrific scenes that they've had to deal with.
Yeah, so the figure being quoted is more than 90 people killed as a result of these airstrikes. Now, look, I mean, we always have to caveat that the Israelis will say that that's a figure coming out of Gaza. It's unverified and it doesn't distinguish between civilians and the likelihood that some of those were also Hamas fighters. But still, huge, huge number. It always brings back to this rule of proportionality during war. What is acceptable? How many civilian casualties are acceptable in an attack on an individual? Now, the Israelis would probably argue that to assassinate a figure so key to Hamas as Mohammed Daif, then a significant collateral damage, number of collateral damage civilians, is acceptable within the laws of war. But there's been 9.5 months now of severe fighting in Gaza. There's been a major, major impact on the civilian population there, tens of thousands dead, and this looks particularly bad.
And what about the aid situation, which we've discussed many times, and we had various efforts made, including that pier that the Americans had built on the coast. Now, we know that that wasn't going to solve all of the problems, but it was meant to mitigate against the lack of aid getting in. What is the latest situation, Alistair, on that front?
Yeah, look, I mean, on paper, the aid pier sounded like a really good positive development. In reality, I don't think it really did much at all. They kept on having to dismantle it because of rough seas. And it doesn't take much to make it unstable. So it was sort of working, then it wasn't working, working again, on and off. The aid, much of it that got in, took a long time to be distributed. And so actually, I think they've made the decision now that it's just not going to operate any longer. It's going to be dismantled permanently. And I don't think it really had a huge impact on alleviating the humanitarian crisis in Gaza at all. It has got worse because the Rafah crossing remains closed. That's the crossing between Egypt and Gaza. The reason it remains closed is that there's an Israeli military presence all along that border. The Israelis are saying to the Egyptians, you can open it. The Egyptians are saying, no, not whilst you're there, not whilst fighting's going on. So that has restricted aid getting in. Aid is still getting in through the Kerem Shalom crossing between Israel and Gaza in the south. There's a new crossing that's been opened in the north. It's proved quite effective, but actually only a couple of days ago, I was looking at the UN figures dating back at 6 months, the daily figures of number of truckloads getting in, and they have reduced significantly in the last month to 6 weeks.
And then on the ceasefire negotiations, which were being held in Qatar and Egypt last week, they ended on Friday. Was there any progress made?
Well, we think there was progress made in some areas. And when we say they ended, the various delegations have returned back to base, if you like, to take further instructions. And we don't think that, you know, this is not an end to the negotiations. And actually, just on that, as a side note, the strikes over the weekend and the potential killing of Mohammed Daif, we wait to see how that might or might not impact the talks. I think it might not, unless Hamas are looking for a get out. You might remember Marwan Issa, who was the number three in Hamas, was killed, and the hostage talks continued despite his killing. So I think the hope is that the talks will not be derailed. Hamas, from everything we're hearing, have made a significant concession on their part by saying that they would accept a temporary ceasefire in the outset for a permanent ceasefire to be negotiated at a later stage. That was something that the Israelis always stuck to. They said they would not agree to a permanent ceasefire from the outset. But I think there were still sticking points, as there always are with these things, in the nitty-gritty. Where do Israeli soldiers withdraw to? How many of them withdraw? Will they allow Gazan men to return to the north from the south? The reason we're talking about men is because the Israelis will fear that some of them are Hamas fighters. And so it's the minutiae. I say minutiae, it's probably the wrong word, because they're all important points. Mm-hmm. But the bigger building blocks of a ceasefire deal seem to be there now, but it's about the smaller detail that needs to be worked through.
Alistair, thank you very much. Alistair Bunkle there, Sky News Middle East correspondent. We'll be back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.